Heading to the Gil McLachlan press conference at 1:30. Sean Higgins is with me now, the North Melbourne star via Zoom. Great to have you on, Sean. Thanks for your time again.
Good afternoon, Dwayne. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've got your own podcast called Mindfulness in Sport, I understand, that you're putting together right now, which is kind of cool because this mental health second wave of this pandemic has become a pretty big story. And the way that Adam Simpson explained it yesterday and some of the players have been explaining it right now, it's been a bit of a difficulty for them, this unknown and anxiety of the unknown factor.
Yeah, pressures and challenges for everyone at the moment, Dwayne, but quite ironic, really, because the podcast got underway before this pandemic that we find ourselves in at the moment and really is on the back of a journey that I've taken place over the last 7 or 8 years with a group called Quality Mind and Rich Maloney, who we've forged up now to create Mindfulness in Sport podcast and just discussing the challenges and pressures that athletes face, but also challenges that everyone can face in their day-to-day lives. And the podcast, we thought, was a great way to express those discussions and also some ideas and tips and tools that can be used. And like I said, we kicked it off at the start of the year, not knowing or foreseeing the challenges that we'd all be facing through times like these. So quite timely and fitting, and hopefully people are listening and gaining a really good insight and some things that they can do. And the last episode as well that just landed in episode 6 and working with Quality Mind gives people a great opportunity as well if they want to dive into the mindfulness and mentoring space that they can create their own business as well. So exciting things, Dwayne.
It is exciting. And as I spoke to Tom Cutler about earlier on in the program, and, you know, Jack Riewoldt sounded pretty flat yesterday. I'm curious to know if Gil McLachlan at least gives some sort of indication of what the light at the end of the tunnel looks like for players or what the rough date might be, whether it's July or it's August, for players to at least mentally have some understanding, because players are so used to having structure around them, regime around them, telling them that you have to be here at this particular time, and now they've got none of that right now.
Yeah, we are, as everyone is, getting exposed to different pressures, aren't we? And I think as players, naturally, we love the routine and structure that's put in place and that football gives us. So that's a huge challenge at the moment that footballers are facing. But I'm sure, Dwayne, everyone's, aren't they, facing that at the moment? Because there's so much unknown and uncertainty, A, when we're going to come out of this, but B, when we do, does my life, is it going to look the same as it did before we went into these challenging times? So players are no different, and that's why it's such an important space, the mindfulness space and the mental challenges that people have. And it was crucial leading into this, but I think it's exposing just how crucial it is, and hopefully we come out of this educated further and have more knowledge about some things we can do, and it is in our control, and hopefully we come out better for it.
So if Hubs gets announced at some stage down the track as being the way the AFL wants to go and you can take your family, would you consider taking yours? Would you take yours, do you think?
Yeah, there's so many what-ifs around that. I'm not sure exactly how it would work. I think as an industry, it would be silly not to explore all options. And if Hubs become a viable option, then clearly we'll look at it. And it'd have to be, I heard a snippet from Paul Marsh earlier, and I think he summed it up pretty well. I mean, we'll look at it, but it also does face some challenges as well. So much water to go under the bridge. But like I said, let's explore everything. And if Hubs is one of them, then great. And if it isn't, then hopefully we can find some sort of a way and a plan forward that we get football back when it's safe, but then as quickly as possible.
Talking to Sean Higgins, North Melbourne star via Zoom. Great to have him. He's launched a new podcast called Mindfulness in Sport. So if you Google that with Sean Higgins, you'll get connected to it. Sean, there's been a bit of talk about draft age, and the 18-year-olds who are ready, like Connor Rosie and Sam Walsh, they're kind of attuned to, I'm going to have a job, a first-year footballer as a 19-year-old, and they're looking forward to having that job. It seems difficult to me to have that restraint of trade put on them and get told you're not going to have a job now as a 19-year-old. You have to wait an extra year. Where do you stand with all that yourself?
Yeah, I probably agree with you in that regard, Dwayne, because we come out of high school, and I think one thing that's changed, and I think it's changed for the better, is back in the years that I went through the draft. I got picked up as a 17-year-old. Fortunately for me, I was a young one at school, so I was just finishing year 12 that I could come straight up to Melbourne without my schooling being impacted. But I had a number of guys that were impacted when you could be picked up as a 17-year-old that you had to relocate and finish off your schooling elsewhere, which probably posed some challenges. Now, we're beyond that, and I think where we land now is about right. It gives the guys that are ready to be explore the career of football straight out of school, well, yes, we can cater for that. And the great thing is we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years that if you're not quite ready, more and more guys are going back to local leagues or state football and then getting picked up as a 19, 20, even 24, 25-year-old. So I think we are catering for everyone at the moment, and I tend to agree with what you just said.
Tom Cutler also, and I mentioned to Tom Cutler, and I've been thinking about this as well, there's one thing to get told by the AFL, we've got the okay from government to play. It's another thing to hear it from the Prime Minister. Do you think that would be something the players would like to hear, the Prime Minister saying we support the return of AFL when that time comes, perhaps?
Yeah, you clearly need that ticked off. The other thing as well, I mean, you want ticked off, and this is, we wouldn't make the call as an industry if we didn't get it. It's from the Health Minister. So you'd want everyone aligned in the country that, from both the sporting organisation and the senior management there, to be happy and comfortable that we can return, which we all clearly are chafing at the bit for. But then also the backing of the Health Minister and the Prime Minister to say, yeah, look, it's safe and it's viable that we can get back playing in a safe manner that's going to look after, A, the fans and also the players that are taking part, you know, and coaches and security. There's so much that goes into, even if we don't have crowds, it is affecting a lot of people.
And some players, you know, they've got their lives set up. They've got great homes and they're well and truly got a heap of money in the bank. Others are young and they haven't got a lot of money to spend. It's hard to make a rule that will be acceptable for all players across the 800 players in the competition, Sean. I'm sure there's some players who maybe won't want to play and some players who'll be desperate to play in a hub situation.
Yeah, that's right. And they're discussions that we'd have to have down the track, but I'm sure if we get to that stage that it's going to be at a time when it's really safe to do so. Like, so many measures have been put in place now. I can't see us flirting with that line at all, even as a country now that we're in isolation and the restrictions that are on all of us at the moment. So football probably falls into that, that we'll be back playing when it's safe to do so. And if, like you said before, that all the government, state government, federal government tick it off, then I'm sure they've ticked it off knowing that they're not putting any of us at risk and that we can get back and do what we love.
Hard part is if a player's got a mother sick or a grandmother ill, or they've just got a reason, the lack of motivation given the world situation, that they don't want to play and they decide not to play, then that's going to be fine. But there's going to be a pay issue with the players who do and players who don't if there's a divide there.
Yeah, they will. And you know, that's why Marshy's doing a great job. And he needs to represent and support the players in that and have constant dialogue with the AFL and what that looks like. And I don't think any player will be pushed into playing if they feel unsafe or it's going to impact their family, that's for sure. But I'm hoping we get to a resolution where everyone's happy in it and it caters for everyone and we get back playing, hopefully quickly, but at a time that's right and a time that's safe to do so.
Is there a chance that some players will use this period to actually upskill their footy skill? I know it's hard because you can't go out and kick, but I remember when I was a little bit younger, there was a player who was told by the coach that he had to improve his left side. So he hired a squash court once a week over summer and just kicked to himself on his left, you know, for an hour on a squash court once a week to improve an upskill. It's a bit hard in this environment where players can't necessarily improve their fitness or improve their kicking or improve their handball skills. But do you think there might be an opportunity that some players could take the time to do that, or do you think all the players have put the ball down?
No, well, I mean, that's an individual preference. I can only speak for myself, but I know what my teammates are doing, and we're definitely still in football mode in terms of training and preparation, and we have daily catch-up and weekly catch-ups online as a group and as coaching. And when it's a great opportunity, like you said, and hopefully our young guys see this as well, that physically we might not be able to do a lot in terms of skill, although we've still got footies in our hands. But, you know, there's so much vision we can watch. You can still have conversations over the phone and online with your coaches, looking at the game, breaking your game down, really going into how do I become a better player off the back of some downtime, which we don't really get this opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, you never get this length of opportunity. The only time you get it's in the off season, and really that's when players want to de-stress, get away from the game and probably take a step back from the rigors of football. And we're in game mode at the moment. We had a big pre-season that what an opportunity for young guys and all of us to look at our game and look at ways we can get better, continue to do what we're doing physically. And, you know, most guys can run or ride or get that sort of work in that they're doing. Do whatever football work you can physically, but massive upside, as you mentioned, to try and develop your game through the educational side of it, whether it be talking to players or coaches as well.
So do you think there'll be any players doing more weights than they would normally do because they want to build themselves up, or will all players just be simply doing less and it's degrees of less, 20% less, 30% less, or 5% less?
Look, I think overall total work's probably slightly less because clearly we're not playing, but yeah, 100%. I think particularly guys that maybe were coming back from injuries or young guys that, you know, it might be upper body strength, it might be leg strength, it might be extra running work that they can get in. I'm sure they'd be targeted areas that you're working through with your high performance team to try and get right and try and get an edge on where you would normally be if we were comparing it to being in season, where sometimes those things are challenging to do while you're still playing. So I'm sure a lot of guys would still be trying to find that edge through this time, because at the end of the day, we're going to get back playing football at some stage. Yeah. And we're competitive and we want to try and get the edge on the competition and guys that we're playing against. So enjoy some downtime, but at the same time, work on some areas that can gain some improvement, as you mentioned.
Been reading articles in the New York Times and, you know, USA Today and articles around the world. One article that I saw on the New York Times was about Olympic athletes who are kind of in this training phase. Some can train, some can't, looking to Tokyo in 2021. And the testing for the wider testing of those that are preparing for the Olympics is now, it's almost in disarray. We don't know how often players or people that are looking at getting to the Olympics are going to be tested in their lead-up training phase, and whether the testing's going to be good enough in comparison to a normal Olympic Games where you go to all these pre-games events and you get tested there. Are your players or any players still getting tested at the moment?
I'm not sure if any of my teammates have in this last couple of weeks, but I do know that this was raised within the playing group and basically said continue with business as normal, that we could be tested. I mean, there's going to be challenges around that in terms of social contact and whatnot and social distancing. But, yeah, it's interesting, especially on the world stage for these sort of teams and normally testing so stringent leading into huge events like the Olympic Games, that it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But we're of the assumption that we could be tested, and whether there's testing taking place or not, then I'm not 100% sure.
No, the Olympics, I think they're trying to have this idea where they get sent a test in the post and you do it yourself and prick your own arm for blood and give a urine sample yourself. But it's a lot different to the current system we've been used to, Sean, where someone follows you into the toilet after a game and watches you.
Yeah, normally, you're exactly right. And as intrusive as that sounds, that's I mean, there's stories of guys that have been stuck at the ground for 2-3 hours post-game because they're dehydrated and couldn't get a sample away. So clearly there's really strict measures that normally are in place. So the world is changing, Dwayne. So interesting that how they're going to adapt to that through particularly the next couple of months. But then I'm sure once for the Olympic side of it, when they get back doing some lead-up events, that it's going to be as potent as ever, the testing, isn't it?
Yeah, but we might be 6 months away or 8 months away from any lead-up event. So you've got 8 months to play with for those who think that cheating's the way to go. At least with football, you're not going to be far away from being back. So hopefully that's not in the equation for any footballer at all. Before I let you go, Sean, you've been watching these old games. What do you like and what you don't like about the old football compared to the current football?
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Tuning in, and particularly the games of the 90s that I grew up with, and some classic games that we still remember. Some of the scoring is just unbelievable. When you look at, I forget the game that I watched the other day, but something like 27 goals. The Essendon game it was. Essendon North game, that's right. Just unbelievable the offense in those games, albeit there wasn't too much defensive structure and pressure from some of the sides, but yeah, the scoring was good to watch.
A lot of the players wore gloves back in those days. Have you ever tried wearing gloves?
Yeah, the only time I've worn a glove, we had a lot of games. When I was at the Bulldogs, we had a lot of games up in Darwin, and we played two or three games up there a year, including our community camp and practice matches in the wet season when it was so hard, and it really was a wet weather game. Even if it wasn't raining, it was sweaty and dewy and slippery. So they're the only times that I wore a glove. But it is interesting to see that the times have changed a little bit like that. And also one thing you notice, and I'm not sure if it's raining less, and we're clearly looked after with the condition of the ovals we play on, but ovals are so good these days that very rarely do we see too many sloppy games in the wet or in the mud at all, do we?
Absolutely. Where would you be with your skill set? Which era would you have been best in, Sean? The one you're in now, or the 80s or the 90s, the 2000s? Which one do you wish you played in, or you're pretty happy to be playing in the one you're in now as opposed to going back in time?
No, I'm happy where we're playing, where the game's at the moment. But clearly, those games to the 90, you watch it. It was nice to be a midfielder roaming through the middle, and well, the forwards would love it. There's no pressure on the delivery coming in, and good one-on-one footy, and it seemed to be a little bit open, but happy where the game is and enjoying playing at the moment, Dwayne.
Great to have a chat to you, Sean. We'll do it every week. I'm really looking forward to having you as a regular part of the program so I can tap into you and get a perspective from the current player's viewpoint. And if you want to check out Sean Higgins' own podcast, Mindfulness in Sport, we're actually going to tweet the link on our SEN Twitter address. So jump onto SEN and you can get a link to click to Sean Higgins for Mindfulness and Sport. Great to have a chat to you, Sean. I'll let you go and watch the Gil McLachlan press conference on Zoom.
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks for the support, Dwayne. Glad I can join in.
Sean Higgins, who's going to be on the program every week. 1-300-736-736 is the number. You can join me anytime. Join me after the break. We're going to try and bring you the press conference live. If not, Sam Edmund will be there. And we'll get a couple of questions, hopefully, to Gil through Sam. And we'll also turn it around to play to you close to in full on about a 1 or 2 minute delay if we can't bring it to you absolutely live. Just a quick reminder as well, the Bowl Show is on, hosted by Jack Heveron with former International Bowler of the Year, Matthew Flapper. Sundays from 11 a.m. on 7.2 and 7+, and on Tuesdays 5 p.m. on Fox Sports and on KO. We'll take a break and hear from Gil.